Gino Ferrucci goes past Pelot. What a move.
Power move from Santino. Strong swing to the outside. Cuts across the bow of the 10. Nothing really Pelot could do there.
I'll tell you what, Santino Ferrucci is absolutely in it to win it.
He's on it.
Hey, guys, what's up?
Hey, Santino.
Hey, Santino.
What's going on?
Hey, man, thanks for joining. I'm getting a weird echo here. There we go. I think it's better.
Let me know if that's better.
That's better. I see you too.
Yeah, what's going on? Sorry, it's a little cold in my house. I forgot to turn the heat on last night.
Where are you right now?
Dallas.
Oh, it's cold in Dallas, huh?
Yeah, 60-something, so it was a little chilly.
Yeah, I guess that's chilly for Texas. I don't know. I'm in Colorado, where it's actually, I think it's in the 20s right now. But
oh, yep. Geez. Nope, not doing that. We're at the weird point where, like, you're turning the heat and the AC, like, on and off and on and off and on and off. So, like, leave the AC on at night and it drops in, like, the 50s. You wake up, your house is freezing cold.
Yeah, we're still – I'm in Chicago. I'm in Indy right now, actually. But in Chicago, it's still, like, 40s and 50s. So, we're still just running the heat.
So, Michael was out at Newcastle Motorsport Park yesterday doing laps in the LO206. I think it was a little chilly.
Yeah. No, it was nice. I'm definitely a little sore today, though. I haven't been in a kart in over a year. But felt good to be out there.
Oh man, yeah, dude, the karting stuff was fun. Me and Power went and ran some shifter at Mooresville.
Yeah, I saw that on your Instagram. Yeah,
yeah, I'm still bruised.
I believe it. I've got a huge bruise, like on both sides where my ribs are.
Yeah,
but those shifter karts are crazy. There were a couple of them running on track. You know, when I was out there just testing yesterday, they are insanely fast.
Yeah, they're quick. They're very fun. They're super physical too.
I believe it.
So we enjoy them, but no, it's all good fun.
Well, hey man, thanks for joining us again. Really appreciate it. And I know I heard you had a pretty big off season, or at least a big January.
Yeah, it was. Getting married was fun. So
cool.
You know, can't complain there. Very very excited.
Good. Well. Yeah, and you're off to a good start this year, obviously, with that strong 11th place at St. Pete, and it looked like a thermal, although you got bumped from behind on turn one. Looked like you'd been running well on all the tests and everything, so that looks good. But Michael and I really want to dig into last year's 500.
Yeah, go for it. We've had a solid start of the year. 500 was good. We have the open test this week, so.
Yeah, how's that look? And I didn't look at the weather for that, but.
Hit or miss. It's Indy, so it could be miserable and 40 and not run at all, or could be beautiful and 80, and nothing surprises me there. So we'll be curious to see how the test flows.
Yeah, but so last time we talked to you was we had you on our Indy 500 preview, and then obviously you went on to have an incredible race. So just want to follow up on that. Talk about that race a little bit. Man, there's so much to dig into. I don't really even know where to start, honestly.
Yeah, no, that race was awesome. I mean, everything that had happened, you know, leading up to it, the way that it played out, it was a really solid day. You know, obviously a little short on everything that ended up happening, but you also need like perfect luck throughout the day. Like you doesn't matter, you know, what you do or what you don't do. It's, you still got to have a little bit of that 500 luck on your side.
Yeah, it looked like the second to last restart in particular. I just went back and rewatched the highlights, and it looked like you had Newgarden and Erickson jumped. Like you were going to at least turn in side by side with Erickson to turn one if that the last yellow hadn't come out. But the other thing about it is if they had waited half a second longer to throw that yellow, then you would have restarted in Newgarden's position in second on the last restart. So I don't know. I mean, the whole end of that race with the three red flags was crazy and everything, but now like reflecting on it almost a year later, how do you look back on all of it?
Yeah. You know, obviously some things are just kind of out of your control at that point. And, no, we had the race had run green. I think we probably would have won the race without any, hiccups or issues. I think we had already led Erickson And I knew that we were quicker than him, especially towards the end of a stint. So I wasn't overly concerned about it. But I think it's just one of those things to where, you know, we could have done a couple of things a little bit better. And I think going into this year, we're going to try to improve on those specific things and see how it goes from there.
There's not a lot of room to go up other than just, you know, two more spots. But I mean, the whole month was pretty spectacular for you. And then starting fourth, you know, Memorial Day and your Stars and Stripes, homes for our troops. It was awesome. And I just looked at the lap chart. You were never out of the top five that I saw other than, you know, pit exchanges. And mostly within a second of the lead all day. And then you took it, you know, lap one, what was it like? Like going into lap 160, took the lead from Erickson and took it into the final round of stops. So it was, you know, I think the up by us, we were top row turn one. So we had an amazing view of all this stuff.
And yeah, no, it was good. That was honestly the best part. That's why we needed a lead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it looked like out your windscreen, you could see the lead every single lap of that race, basically, other than the pit exchanges.
Yeah, it was good. The last pit stop for us was a little bit of a hiccup with the tire hitting the wall. It was just one of those things where they tossed the tire so perfectly, it hit the wall perfect, and the front tire guy actually ended up catching it. But, you know, it just delayed our stop maybe a second and a half, and at second and a half at 220 is a little bit of track position. We didn't come out in the best of shape, but, you know, still with a long race left, like, yeah, we never lost sight. You know, it was just a very clean day all in all. I mean, it was a really long start to that race, though. That had to be the most boring and, like, sketchy 100 and almost 100 laps to start. The first two pit stops were just under green, which was nuts.
Yeah, we love that. I didn't think any of it was boring. I thought the whole race was incredible. A lot of it obviously behind you, which is nice, right? But,
oh, yeah. When you're up front and you're just watching it, it's quite different. Because I say it's boring. It's stressful, too. Because when you're green flag like that, you know the room for error in margin is none. And, like, if something goes wrong, there's no adjustments. There's no, like, you're just stuck. That many green flag laps in a row, like, with the car and going through sets of tires, like, you're trying to keep up with adjustments. But it was good. Honestly, the sketchiest part of the race was probably when we were running behind the McLarens in a fuel strategy. So.
Yeah, I'm not recalling that, but I do have some specifics. I watched it again this morning, the lap 9 restart where I think you were fifth. You had to fend off Pillow coming into turn one, and then you made a pass on Rossi. He tried to block the inside on the back straight, got all the way down into the dust, and you kind of held him down there and moved up to fourth. And then I think that was when the crash happened with the Award right in front of you where Erickson held on. But
yeah, that was I knew I needed to keep Pillow behind me. That was a given for sure, which I wasn't too worried about it. I had a good start. He wanted to stick his nose down there, and I was just kind of like, no, thank you. Like, what are you doing? And then Rossi had just been I like the guy. He's a cool dude, but he'd just been an absolute outright dick all month to us. So he'd come out of the pits in front of us and just check up for no reason in the XL lane or whatever to go back on the track. I forget whatever they call it, but try to cause us to wreck. And his tire guy at the start of the race threw the outside rear hose and it clipped my front wheel. So if you go back and watch the first set of stops under yellow, you'll watch me leave the box because they have a head-on view of this. So many people missed it. It's nuts. You watch our car come out sideways and then just hook straight. Like, I looked like I honestly just caught traction and took off. What ended up happening is the guy threw the hose. If you look carefully, you'll see his outside rear throw the hose intentionally at our car. And it hit the front wheel, missed the front wing, hit the front wheel of our car and nearly spun us in.
Damn. Do you radio that into race control or anything?
Yeah, because it's a penalty for us and for them because it was intentional.
Yeah.
Like you can't, like when you're changing tires, it's one thing when you're, I mean, you think about it, everybody, it's not NASCAR, right? You're not two people aside to, you know, going outside to inside. You're one person. So when you're done with that outside wheel, there's no need to take your hose and your wheel and throw it out into the transition lane. Like you literally just toss the gun around the backside of the car and that's it. And so, you know, they were trying to make my exit. It was basically, it's dirty. You know, they're trying to make my exit really shitty and slow me up. So when I got the chance to pass him, I was just, you know, still in the point of like, you've been a dick. You think you're all good and whatever, but I went to pass him and I was like, you can have a taste of your own medicine. And yeah, so I wasn't having it anymore with him or his team.
He was behind you then after that for another, I think, just the next restart. Did you think maybe there was some kind of goon move coming back?
No, he doesn't have the balls, quite frankly. Not a chance.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that. I feel like I do remember seeing you come out of that stop in the slow lane, you know, not tracking all the way up to the pit wall. So I guess that puts a little bit of context to it. But
yeah, you go back. It's clear as day. It's so messed up. So I don't understand why anyone would also do that. I mean, it's just so dangerous because, I mean, if he hooks my front wheel, I just crash into his car, which like. Why? Like, I don't know what the guy was thinking.
Yeah. And the team's probably all still standing there in the pit box and everything.
I mean, it was such a dangerous move on his crew guy's part. So, but I mean, like, whatever. So,
yeah.
Maybe he's from NASCAR and that's what he's just used to. Who knows?
Yeah. I stood in the pits for a couple of the 500s. I was there when COVID, when nobody was able to go. So I kept my streak alive. And anyway, I couldn't believe the violence of a pit, you know, all these, everybody coming in together, the guns are heavy, right? And hot, and they're throwing them against the wall. Hoses are everywhere. I mean, it's insane. And then to go do something like that, you know, just creating that little bit of extra potential for mayhem is, yeah, a little frustrating. But all right. So then at the end, you know, after they shuffle you back to third for the final restart, I know you lined up second there, you know, on that red flag. We were watching from our spot, then they moved you back to third. And anyway, you held on to third. I mean, the gaps were kind of wide there with, you know, they throw the green with one to go. And it looked like Erickson went out first, Newgarden. There was big gaps. And I don't know if you guys did that on purpose because you knew the draft was going to suck you right up. But
no, we didn't know what was happening. I mean, okay. They've never done that. There's never been an out to green situation ever. They hesitated to throw the red, which could have saved the IndyCar made some mistakes. Yes. At the end of the day, they made the right call, red flagging the race to end under green, which is fine. But they just, I think that they were hesitant in their decision of, do we let it end under yellow or do we red flag it and let it end under green? And I think by the time they debated it, it was a bit late and, you know, it is what it is. So, but when we all left the pits, there's no pace car, no nothing. It was just out, pace, go. Honestly, if I was Erickson, I would have come out of the pits and just took off. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, why not?
What are they going to do?
Yeah.
There's no rules for that.
Right.
Like, you know, I mean, it's just like one of the, So when he left, like also the way that the Honda was geared to the Chevy, we had a much longer second gear. So when he restarts in second, he gets up to third and fourth really quick versus us. It took us a minute. So, cause we were geared differently. That's why that restart that I went from third to first or third almost into first into turn one, Newgarden was leading and he restarted it at a much higher pace for our second gear. And hence why I was able to get the jump that I did. The Honda restarts, we were just, our second was just way too long. It was more maximized for pit lane than it was restarts. And I think that that was something that was on our list of things to adjust for this season.
Yeah, Michael and I talk a lot about the red flag situation on our post-race. Thank you for joining us on our pre-race last year, by the way. That was awesome. But on our post-race, we talk about it and also the red flags in 2022. So we get a little frustrated by the lack of any sort of clarity. You know, I get the whole idea of wanting to red flag it and finish under green, but I think there needs to be a little more structure around it so teams can figure out what the hell to do, you know, when you're coming up to the end.
But, people should, running 23rd just shouldn't crash. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how else to put that.
Yeah.
You hiding for anymore. That was like, yeah, it's one thing when you're in the top 10, I feel like, but when you're in the 20s, like where are you going? That was why I was more frustrated about.
Yeah. But Ward and Erickson, you know, Erickson held on, but those guys were battling for the front, you know? And so,
they're battling for second place. Like, and eventually what was the lead in the win? So, yeah, that's, in my opinion, that's so different. I mean, you wreck winning that race. I mean, yeah, that's, I feel like, acceptable. 23rd, three laps to go. I mean, on the front stretch of all things.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, that one.
That was a pretty clunky incident.
I don't understand sometimes. It looked like an iRacing lobby for a hot second there.
Yeah. But so, all right. So that does give us this sort of bizarre out to green situation, one lap shootout. So you're in third, restart a little bit off the back, that second gear thing that gives us some context. Actually, I had no idea. I'd never heard that before, but, this race comes down to, I think, probably the most exaggerated version of the dragon move that we've ever seen. And you were looking right at it. You saw those guys go all the way down towards the below the attenuator, really, and come back up. And watching the replay, you chose to just stay up, you know, on the normal part of the racetrack. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. From your perspective, what did that look like?
Just looked dumb. I mean, like, I asked Joseph if he thought that in the post year meeting, if he thought that if he did that, if he didn't do that, if he thought he'd still win. He wasn't sure. And I don't, it is so hard to, even when you're single car first, second, without the snake, to pull out and pass someone before the line. The run that you need to have is ungodly good. Because I practiced it in all week long. You know, where do I want to be on the last lap? Do I want to be in the lead? Do I want to be second? Like, you wanted to be in the lead. I mean, there is no, he would have got to him without a doubt. Had he not run the stake, he would have got to him, but he wouldn't have completed the pass but by the time he hit the line. So they actually got rid of the snake this year. It is now an illegal move enforced by a drive through.
Okay. That's good news. And what is the rule? Just no, all four underneath or just, I mean, you shouldn't even be able to drop two down there. I mean,
nope. You can't go below the attenuator anymore, and you're only allowed to make one move down. One move down, one move up. So you come off the final corner for the final time, you can go down to the wall, and you can come up to the wall, and that's it.
So I've been curious about that line. You know, when I started watching the race, obviously the way you did the lap, the racing line was different because they'd slow down in the turns and all that. But drivers would stay out to the outside wall all the way down the straight. And then I forget when it happened. I don't know if it was more with ground effects or, you know, more downforce. They started drifting to the inside wall and then drifting back out to the turn in. And I was just never clear on if that, is there a reason to do that? Or is that just kind of a blocking line? Or it's like anytime that, you know, even when you're by yourself, these guys, you're kind of drifting down toward the middle or even the inside of the track before you swing back out. It didn't happen that way back in the day. I don't know.
In racing or in qualifying, are you at?
It seems like all the time. Like a fast lap is just to get off the wall and come down toward the inside wall.
So in qualifying, you kind of want to go down about almost to the middle of the track because you want to be off the walls because the walls will create pressure. So you do want to be in the middle. People going down to the inside wall are just people that are uneducated and want to create more distance. Yeah. In the race, you go down to the inside wall to protect the inside.
Yeah.
But then you come back up. But this year, it'll be very interesting to see what happens without the snake. Because if you come to the win and you're first, and you know, if you're someone's running first and you're second, and they snake and they go left, right, they get a drive through. They'll take the win away from you for doing it. So the defense now is a big deal. So be curious to see how it affects the racing. You might actually be better off being in second into the final lap, passing for the win down the back. So yeah, it'll be interesting. That or you catch a lap car and get lucky.
Yeah. Get a little toe.
Yep. It'll change the dynamic of the racing for sure. I think all for the better. So
yeah, we've seen, I think it seems like for the past 3 or 4 years now, it's come down to these pretty dramatic weaves down both the back and front straightaway. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'll be curious. I mean, I hope it doesn't, you know, it'd be a shame if the guy who crosses the line first is penalized for a dragon move and gets it taken away. I don't think that'd be very good optics for the series, but it does seem like the right move for safety.
Yeah, you need to have rules. And if everyone's going to enforce them and then say one person just at the end of the race decides not to, and you don't penalize the person, then there's no point in having the rules.
Yeah, that's a great point.
That's where I think everyone was quite, you know, well, if he doesn't do it, then why would I do it type situation. So they just made it to where if you do it, it doesn't matter. You will get a penalty.
Yeah. And I assume that's for any position on any lap.
No, it's the leader of the train.
Okay.
So if the guy leads the train does it and the second person behind him, he can follow. It's a lead pack rule of all things, which is as it should be. But, and then the rules for blocking still apply. So you're not allowed to make a move in reaction, which
it's also have to be proactive.
Yeah. So we all saw that at Thermal with Blomqvist and Rossi going into turn one. That was a reactive move. They had issues with their system, so they never called it. But in theory, that was a drive through.
Not recalling that, but that brings us back to this season. Let's talk about this a little bit. So, yeah, second year with Foyt. Obviously, you guys had some real highlight moments last year. You know, continuity's going to pay off, I'm sure. And we keep hearing about this partnership with Penske Racing. And I'm curious, I don't know how much you could tell us about that, but how does that work? I mean, I feel like, you know, they saw your race last year, and I know you were on Tim Cindric's call list as a replacement driver the year before, so they want to keep an eye on you. But I think a lot of it is them wanting to see what you guys did. And I'm curious, how much do they share of their own data? Things like that.
They share a good bit. You know, honestly, we have one of their engineers who's my race engineer. So, which is quite helpful. We're not in debriefs or anything, but working with them on some damper program setup, you know, it's been quite helpful for our team to catch up, get up to speed. At the end of the day, though, it's still very tough because of the personnel and all of the procedures that we're trying to now follow and getting people to adapt. It's a very tough thing to do, especially just over winter break. And you know, we're still learning as a team. You know, all three of those guys are very different drivers over at Penske, and I drive differently to them as well. So, you know, what exactly, if I wish it worked as if whatever works for power works for me. So it doesn't always work that way, but, you know, there's growing pains with trying to understand how to get the cars to drive for you. I mean, if you look at McLaughlin, when he first came into the series for Penske, he was really nowhere to be found, and it took him a little bit to understand what was happening and why. And you know, we're kind of in that stage right now. It's not because, you know, we don't know how to drive. It's just we're trying to learn all these new tools, figure out what's going to be best for our car and our program, and then eventually put it to work. So we were pretty good in St. Pete. Thermal was a struggle, but we were really good in St. Pete.
Yeah, St. Pete. I mean, I think you matched your outside of Indy your best finish last year at St. Pete. But just this Penske partnership thing, does that mean like learning new tools? Are you talking about a new damper package? Are you talking about how you unload and then progress through setup changes through the weekend?
Yeah. So it's how we unload going through setups by tools. You know, we have different ways of setting the car up than we'd had before. Different procedures on how to keep things maintained, I would say. It's just, or how we operate on a race weekend. We're more efficient. The issue is obviously when you put in new protocols and all these new strategies, you're very much not efficient when you start. And hence we missed free practice too in St. Pete. We had a chain reaction of unfortunate events, which put us on the back foot for qualifying. But nonetheless, we were a top 10 car. We just, you know, we struggled with the fuel economy strategy, which was new to us. We also, our pit stops, we were up and down, which was quite funny. We were up and down really quick. The communication that we had for procedure from leaving the box from when we went down on the ground was off. So we lost a second and a half just sitting, of all things, which on a race where you're, you know, it's really tight between, you know, 8th and 13th place doesn't help you. So, no, we, you know, a bunch of these things that we needed to get sorted, and I think we have sorted going into Long Beach.
So you mentioned driving style, and I remember, you know, we spoke with you about your style and sort of a low input kind of guy, and we were trying to figure out at Penske who you might be closest match to. And I was thinking it might be McLaughlin. Michael said maybe Newgarden. You're saying there's really no match, which makes it tough.
Yeah. If anything, I'm closest to power, but I'm a good mix of power and Newgarden's stuff. Okay. So big front support. I'm happy to manage the rear instability a little bit more than others, but you know, I like a lot of front exit. So they're just trying to figure out how we make that happen consistently, which we did a good job of in St. Pete.
And yeah, at least on paper or on TV, Long Beach and St. Pete look very similar, you know, kind of same kind of track and similar corners and stuff. So you probably pretty optimistic. You have goals for Long Beach. I know last year you were 11th there, which was solid.
Yeah, you know, I think in St. Pete would have been nice to be at the top 10. I think Long Beach, we should be able to get back in. We should get in the top 10, no problem. I think we have a clean weekend. The car should be relatively similar to St. Pete. We have a couple more things that we had learned. I'd like to be in the top 5. I think that we're very much capable of that. Looking at St. Pete, we are definitely capable of, you know, qualifying inside that fast 6. So we just have to kind of get, you know, we just need to have things go smoothly. You know, can't have hiccups in practice. Got to unroll good. Setups have to be done correctly. Like there's so many little, it's attention to detail right now. So as long as we have all of those things set, we should be pretty good, I think.
Well, I'm going to be there first time. I think I'll be at Long Beach. And I don't know, since before you guys were born. So I'm looking forward to it. And I got a paddock pass. I'm going to come look for you on Saturday. I don't get there till Saturday morning, but hopefully,
yeah, we'll come on in, Sky.
Yeah, hopefully I'll catch the qualifying and you'll be right there in the final 6 for S6.
Yeah, that'd be the goal. I'd like to be in the fast 6 this year, other than just in Indy. So it'd be nice to make it in a road and street course. So, but no road course programs coming along. Honestly, the best thing that ever happened in the series is we went to the barber test, to 2 days testing at thermal, to the Indy test for the hybrid. I mean, it literally catapulted our program so far ahead. So it was fantastic.
Great. What do you think of the hybrid thing? The whole concept and, you know, just implementing it in the middle of the season.
I think implementing it in the middle of the season is definitely strange, but I'm very excited for it because for me as a driver, it's a great tool for the way that I like to drive the car. It essentially helps create a massive amount of rotation, which I'm always happy to have. And you can use it either manually or automatically. And I prefer to use it in a manual way. And if you're good at using it in a manual way, you can be quicker. So which is good. So the fact that we have a day behind it, you know, we got very comfortable with it very fast. So we were able to just go through car testing, which was awesome. So, and then we took the pray.com car a little too far and let Jesus take the wheel. If you saw the internet meme of that one.
I did not actually.
I unfortunately took teammate's car through the gravel trap and caught about a foot of air.
I did not see the memes in that, but I might have to go see if I can dig them up. It sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that was a little bit more sketchy than I had anticipated. Airborne with that car is not pleasant.
Yeah, but it sounds like you're excited for the hybrid implementation. Do you think it could be somewhat of an equalizer? You know, I just think about F1. The running order in that series rarely changes significantly unless there's a big change in rules. And this seems like, you know, one of the more significant changes to IndyCar that we've had since they first, you know, since they switched to this chassis back in 2012.
It's definitely going to, it's already such a tight driver series. It's going to really showcase, I think, who has everything, a well put package together between car, driver, and engineering. So Will's going to be incredibly quick. Same with Dixon once they implement it, because they've logged thousands and thousands of miles. But for the rest of us that are getting up to speed, I think it'll be quite entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I was going to say it's almost the opposite of an equalizer. I feel like the big teams are going to have a little advantage there, at least at the first few races.
Just your two veteran drivers more so. I mean, in all fairness, though, I don't think this unit would be as plug and play and as easy as it was for me to adapt without all of the miles that Will did, because it has gone through so many revisions and stages I know what that's like to just be sitting there and just doing hours and hours and hours of development and like slowly making gains. So I think that everything that he's done is for the better, because you don't want to have too many cooks in the kitchen. You really just want to have one really solid driver getting everything set and being like, hey, here's your end product with Chevy. And it's a very good product for all, despite all of everything we've heard for the rumors, they've done a hell of a job.
Cool. Good. Well, I think we're up against our allotted time. And man, I really appreciate you coming. But Michael, anything else while we still got him?
No, I don't think so.
Right on. Well, I appreciate you guys' time. So I look forward to seeing you in Long Beach.
Awesome, man. Thanks. Good luck next weekend.
I appreciate it.
And the Indy test.
Oh, thanks.
That was awesome.
That was great. Yeah, he's very easy to talk to. I love the insight. I mean, this is like little things like that, hard to catch watching in person, don't catch watching on TV or anything. That's all really interesting.
And obviously, this is not the first time we've spoken with him. We have two other interviews. We go through his career a little bit, talk about driving style and stuff. So if you like that one, go back and check the other ones out. Last year's 500 pre-race. And then I think it was an off-season interview. He didn't have a full-time ride at the time. So
I'm definitely going to go back and watch that, try to find that highlight of Rossi's tire changer throwing the gun at their car, leaving the pit box. Yeah, the Penske thing was interesting too. It sounds like they not only have access to data, but they're sort of copying Penske's entire race weekend plan. Yeah, even the thing about their communications for leaving the box costing them time, that's way more granular than I would have thought.
Yeah.
You know, I just sort of assumed they were getting access to data. I didn't realize they were necessarily overhauling the way that they organized the team. I mean, we have no idea what that looks like. As fans, we don't know how teams approach the weekend individually and also how that differs from team to team. I mean, it could be wildly different the way you can. I don't know exactly what all they can change on the car, but I mean, the way you adjust, if you tell one engineer, like, I need a little bit more bite from corner entry down to the apex, you know, they may, one may go for, I'm making up an example, one may go for wing angle, where one may go for like stiff spring stiffness or something like that. And then the way you combine those between like wings and shocks and things like that, I don't know. I just feel like in ride height, there's probably so many different ways to combine setup changes that I bet each team has a very different formula for doing that. Also very interesting to hear about that. Like they didn't really even fully understand what was going on in the cockpit for the last restart, that they, there was no, you know, I didn't even think about the fact that because it was an out and go, there was no pace car to lead them out or anything. Ericsson, the leader, was just in control the entire time, and he'd never done that before, and nobody behind him had ever done that before. And the difference in second gear and everything sort of spreading him out. I don't know. I mean, that was all really interesting stuff.
That was. And I wonder what would have happened if Ericsson would have just gassed it right out of there, you know? And
like, what are they going to do? Like, flag the restart? They don't have another lap to flag the restart. They have to just let him go. Penalize him? There's no rule against that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, that was good, man. All right, well, let's wrap it up.
Yeah.
Okay, I think you'll see where I'm going with this. This is Santana off their third album, Everything's Coming Our Way.